This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector. Investigative conversations about issues that impact our lives. Be curious. Friday mornings at 9 a.m. only on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is The Deep Dive, and I'm your host, Brooke Spector, as usual, on Friday mornings at Chai FM. And as you know, as listeners know, we try to vary our topics ranging from nuclear physics to education to the nature of international politics. We've even done a few things on tax law and tariffs, just to keep everybody informed about as much as possible. And one topic that, of course, is beginning to preoccupy many is the nature of South Africa's political system's future as the country heads into its local elections. They're not so very far off, and it's part of a larger international trend. The American midterm elections are happening, or at least the primaries, to select candidates are happening now as well, and there are other elections around the world. So this topic is always topical, to be redundant. And we've invited, as our guest today, a young author, Tara Roos, R-O-O-S. Her new book, Where To From Here. It's not a travelogue. It's not a geographical primer. It's not a map book. The subtitle is Populism and Coalition Politics in South Africa. And Tara is a parliamentary correspondent for a major newspaper in this country. She's still, I hesitate to use the word young, but she's still young. I'm not sure if that's meant as a compliment or just an observation, but she's written a tome which goes into some deep analysis of South Africa's politics. She's, for a young author, she's got lots of experience in a variety of engagements as a youth ambassador and younger person participating in international fora. A lot of experience brought to bear on this. I read the book the other day, read all. I like to do that with guests who have written something. I think it's important that we not just plunge into a conversation on the basis of pull quotes. One of the paragraphs, in fact, right toward the end, which struck me as a pretty fair synopsis of the basic theme of her argument, and I want to read it to you, just a couple of sentences. In that sense, the local elections are less a sideshow between national polls than a hinge. They will help determine whether South Africa settles into a pattern of permanent low-grade crisis managed by an exhausted governing party and a noisy but insubstantial opposition, or whether new configurations inside the old parties or outside them can begin to build something more capable. Local government for the next few years is where the answer will be written. I think that, in a sense, sums up what she was trying to do with this book. And with that introduction, let me welcome you, Tara. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
I read your book. I've read books on politics internationally and South African politics. One of the things that struck me as important about the way you handled your material was a serious reliance on actual polling data. And that's good. And I think that's important. You spent, I think, a little less time on policies by individual politicians or parties, and less on the personalities and qualities of leadership of party leaders and other politicians than you did with the data analysis. Was that a conscious choice of yours, or was that just sort of an artifact of the way you found your material?
So my background is in research. Before becoming a parliamentary correspondent, I actually worked as a parliamentary researcher. And so I have a very technical numbers-based background, and it was very important for me to have the IEC electoral data as the basis of this book, because I think so often we are very caught up in party political messaging and ideology, and really we are not looking at the factual numbers in front of us to truly assess how well these parties have done in the 2024 election, and using that numbers basis as an indicator for the upcoming electoral performance of these parties.
That's interesting. I mean, in a sense, what you're really arguing, I guess, is that if you're going to talk about politics, it better be rooted in data rather than simply speculations. And that's, I think, a good start. That leads me to the question, though, of why you didn't break it down further rather than simply by province, perhaps voting district by voting district, or metropolitan area by metropolitan area where it was applicable, or in some other fashion, because there's lots of data out there. Maybe not, we're not swimming in it as much in the way that you might be in Britain or the US, but there's still a lot of data out there. Why not go deeper into the politics, into the data beyond simply provincial boundaries?
The way that I break down the book, specifically, in 2024, because it was a national election, I didn't want to look at, if we were to break down the election further to say, okay, let's look at the city of Joburg. What does the provincial ballot votes of the city of Joburg tell us about who voted inside the city? Because it is very difficult to translate national electoral data into local electoral data. The manner in which people vote in a national election and the manner in which people vote in a local government election, those are fundamentally two different things. And while I think that the provincial data from 2024 could tell us a lot about the upcoming local government elections, it is really the ideological shift that we saw from 2024 going into 2026 that I think is going to be the biggest difference between these two elections. 2024 was this watershed election. Everyone knew that the ANC was going to fall, but the question was, how much was the ANC going to fall by? And in 2026, it is almost as if these parties are starting at a completely on a completely new slate, rather. And I think 2026 is really going to be the election where we are going to see unprecedented contestation. And for the first time, unlike in 2024, the focus was really on the ANC and how much they were going to fall by. The focus in 2026 now is going to be how much can each political party gain up coming off of the ANC's loss.
One of the key themes in political voting analysis, not political analysis per se, but voting analysis in countries like the US and Britain and some other nations, is the idea of the realigning election, in which people as a whole, voting population as a whole, looks for a new way of thinking about the governance of their society. And determines that en masse, really, that the party that they had previously voted for, the leadership that they had accepted almost without question, is no longer appropriate or viable for them, and they shift in dramatic ways to a new party or a new way of thinking or a new leadership, a realigning election. I get the feeling that implicitly you're thinking about South Africa as heading into a realigning election, paired with the idea that I draw from what you wrote, that much of what South Africa's politics and political behavior is also going to be based on is the notion of identitarian politics, people identifying their voting decisions based on their ethnicity or racial affiliation and affirmation. Those two processes work in tandem. Am I reading right, your interpretation?
Absolutely. When we look at the politicians that did well in 2024 and the parties that did well in 2024, it was really those who had centered identity politics. And the rise of populism and identity politics is directly linked to the hegemony the ANC had over this country for 30 years. And because of dominant ANC rule, we now see hyper-factionalism in the political landscape. And the reason why, identity politics is becoming so popular is because of the government's inability to directly address governance issues. When if you speak to any South African and you're to ask them what their main concern is, they would tell you one of two things. They would either talk about the economy and economic stagnation, high unemployment, or they would talk about crime. And they would talk about crime and safety, being their biggest issue. And because of how glaring those two issues are for all South Africans, when we look at these politicians and populist politicians and political parties, it is their ability to prey on those vulnerabilities of groups in South Africa and use those as talking points. If you look at Afriforum and Solidarity, they would tell you white farmers are the most oppressed group in South Africa. Gate McKenzie and the Patriotic Alliance, and even to some extent now Darylene James and in Action SA will tell you that it's actually coloured South Africans who are the most oppressed because look at the deaths on the Cape Flats. But the reality is that 70 murders happen a day in South Africa. We are all affected by crime. It doesn't disproportionately affect one group. And because of the government's inability to address crime, we see politicians preying on this vulnerability for South Africans, and it is just a tactic to get more votes.
Part of the way I think I have thought about politics for years in this country, in America, and other places where I've lived, is that a would-be leader, a politician aiming for higher or senior office, relies on one of two emotional qualities, either hope or fear, and sometimes both at the same time if they can. But in some ways, fear is probably the stronger of the two because it's more visceral and it affects people as they sit home, they talk over dinner, and as you say, the topic that comes up is crime and all its manifestations and variations. Did you find in what you were writing and reading and thinking about that duality, hope versus fear, was important, or was it primarily fear?
I think that it is primarily fear. There are many South Africans who still have hope in this country, but majority of South Africans are disillusioned and they are driven by fear. When we look at the current economic environment in South Africa, it is very, very unstable. Many young South Africans are dealing with high youth unemployment. Many graduates are struggling to find jobs. It is this fear of not being able to secure employment. It is the fear that if you go to a police station to report a crime, the police will be unable to help you. It is fear that is driving South Africans today. And it is that fear that politicians are using to prey on vulnerable South Africans. And there is definitely a sentiment of hope among South Africans. And I personally do feel hopeful. I talk about this in the book. The fact that, the day after this watershed election in South Africa, that everything was completely normal. There were no protests, there was no civil uprising. For many South Africans, life today actually feels exactly the same, it did the day after the election. Very little has changed in terms of the environment of South Africa. And that is a positive thing. It shows us that democracy works. When we look across the continent, we cannot say the same thing for many of our neighboring countries. When the Liberation Party falls historically in Africa, it sends the country into chaos. And for us as South Africa, things have stayed exactly the same. And I think that does give us some hope to say that there are many things wrong in South Africa currently. We have so many issues, but those problems can be fixed. And I don't think that we should lose complete hope as a country.
We're speaking with Tara Roos, who is the author of her new book, Where to From Here: Populism and Coalition Politics in South Africa. This is The Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector, as usual, on IFM. And we'll be back just after these messages. Don't touch that dial, as we used to say in the analog age. Don't touch that dial.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector. My guest is, of course, Tara Roos, the author of her new book, Where to From Here. And we were talking about the balance or imbalance, perhaps, between hope and fear among South Africans for the future, politically. But I want to throw one more variable into that discussion, if I might. And it's implicit also in some of your data and explicit in some of the text, the notion that, sociologists call it anomy or alienation, but it's the way in which voters or would-be voters or putative voters have backed out of the political system, and the declining number of people as a percentage who actually show up to vote. And this has been a downward trend line for some years. And there is nothing at this point to indicate that it would go the other way. How do you see this declining participation rate in politics as voters or as activists or as participants in some other way?
I do believe that the pendulum will swing back. You know, in 2015, 2016, we saw high political participation. In the peak of the Zuma years, people were actively involved in politics. We saw thousands signing petitions wanting Jacob Zuma out of office. We saw, you know, people protesting. I vividly remember people standing on street corners saying Zuma must go. We saw murals going up. You know, there was a very high political activity and political participation in the democratic system. And we've seen a rapid decline from that, you know, in recent years. And I do believe that the pendulum will swing back and we will see an increase in political participation, because our problems are quite large in South Africa. And you cannot remain politically inactive when you have problems as big as ours. When you make a decision not to vote, that is something that cannot be taken lightly. You know, you cannot isolate yourself out of bad governance, which is what many South Africans, particularly in the middle class, are doing. They're saying, you know what, I won't get involved with politics. I will have a JoJo tank. I will put solar panels up in my home. I will dig a borehole. I'll have an inverter. You know, they buy themselves out of their way, or think that they're buying themselves out of, you know, the ways of bad governance. But you can't buy your way out of bad governance. You need to be politically active and you need to participate in a democratic system. And I do think the tide is going to turn, because as we see, you know, high unemployment is something that affects all South Africans. No matter what field you are in, you are dealing with the fact that we have economic stagnation. You know, we should be growing at 5%. Per GDP. We're only projected to grow 0.4% over the next financial quarter. And that is something that affects all South Africans when we look at the cost of living today. And I think you cannot buy yourself out of an issue like that. You know, you are able to have these cosmetic fixes for your day-to-day living, but the consequences of inaction and not participating in the democratic system will come back to bite you eventually. And I do think that we are slowly starting to see the tide turn.
Two other observations that come to mind almost immediately from reading the book. I actually ended up reading it almost twice, once as on my laptop, and then I spent a weekend in a bookstore sitting quietly in a corner and reading the book again, partly because it's very hard to read a book on a laptop, and secondly, it was nice and inviting and warm in the bookstore, and they had lots of coffee, so I stayed there and read it, and they were very kind. They kept delivering coffee. That was nice. The text is, as we've said initially, is fairly data heavy. I don't mean to sound as if it was abstract. Policies among parties, among candidates, among leaders, was really sort of in second place to the data about voting shares, percentages, and changes. And leadership as a texture for politics was also mostly less than foregrounded, with two exceptions. And I don't mean to imply you had sympathy for, but you were, I think, intrigued with the way in which Jacob Zuma and Gayton McKenzie have managed to use the levers personal politics to bring themselves into the political arena in a way that appealed to voters, whether it was identitarian processes or whether it was on the basis of I feel your pain or whether it was fear. But I think those two figures, if I did word counts, would have occupied the largest percentage of named politicians Am I reading you right, or am I overstating your sympathies?
I do think that I have a fascination with politics and politicians in particular. You know, when we look at politicians as outsiders, we look at them saying a speech, you know, maybe they tweet something out that is provocative. But, you know, everything that politicians do are calculated. When a politician, you know, stands at a rally and gives a speech, it is not them standing up there and speaking their mind. That speech is crafted by a speechwriter. They have a researcher, there's admin staff, you know, there's a team that goes into these politicians and the political messaging that they're feeding us. And what I really try to do in the book is break down the facade, you know, of these politicians and focus on the facts. And the facts are the numbers and the electoral data. You know, if I could use the DA as an example, when we look at their political messaging, you would think the DA is doing phenomenally. You know, they in 2024, they after 20 years of being in opposition, they went and finally entered the government. You know, they're governing in government now, and it is really framed as this win. Between 2019 and 2024, the DA lost more than 100,000 votes. The best the DA has ever done was in 2014. They received 1.4 million votes under Helen Zille. Subsequently, they've lost 600,000 votes. The DA is stagnating. There is no growth. Them entering government has more to do with the ANC's failures rather than the DA's success. And that is just one of the many observations I make in the book, is when we really look at the numbers, it tells us the truth about these political parties. And I think that that is the most important thing.
So, Tara, you turned your unblinking eye on the machinery and mechanisms and actual voting outcomes. I go back to my earlier question about the overall decline of participation by the act of voting rather than the act of demonstrating or sign bearing or whatever it might, or demonstrations or what it might be. Why do South Africans as a whole have less faith in government now? Or less faith in the ability of government to deliver on its promises than they might have 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago. I realize that some of that's before your arrival on the scene, but I know you've looked at the data. Why do you think, in the mind of South African voters, if there is such a uniform feeling, why has there been this overall retreat from participation at the voting booth?
I think that many South Africans feel like that there is inaction with their vote. They haven't really felt a difference with their vote because for so long the ANC had a majority. So if you voted for any other party other than the ANC, nothing changed. You know, laws weren't passed because the ANC had the majority and the ANC decided. You know, it was very common that for a very long time, you know, what the ANC NEC decided, what their top seven decided, is what happened in South Africa. And so many people have become apathetic from voting because they feel, you know what, the ANC is going to control the country anyway. And that has changed, you know, when we look at, you know, very recently the election of the impeachment committee chair in Parliament. For the first time, such an important committee is not being chaired by an ANC member. That wouldn't have happened had we not had the 2024 election. And so I think, you know, many South Africans have felt apathetic because they felt that their vote hasn't derived any change. But that is no longer true. And because we are in this era of coalition politics, like we've seen in the city of Joburg, you know, a party with two seats could hold the mayorship. And so I think, you know, it is far less now. And it's far more important now, rather, that people do actively engage and they actively vote because it doesn't matter the size of the party anymore. It just matters how parties are able to negotiate power. And I think that has been the biggest change that we've seen electorally from 2024 to 2026.
That's okay. I want to get back to that. First, we're going to take a very quick station break. This is the Deep Dive. I'm my guest today, Tara Roos, excuse me. I'm Brooke Spector, your host on High FM, and we'll be back after these messages.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector. My guest, Tara Roos, author of the new book, Where To From Here. And we're talking politics. We're talking politics because the local election is nigh upon us, and because there's been lots of campaigning for that set of elections. And her new book is really on the bookshelves just a couple of weeks ago. And I've read it, and I think it's an interesting and useful approach, boiling itself down to actual data rather than political speculations and thumbsucks and comments from sage observers of longtime political thought. And that's, in a way, it's very different from most of the writing that you see on South African politics, which alone makes it a useful volume to look at. But I want to turn our gaze, if I might, without betraying who you don't have to say who you're going to vote for. I would never ask that of somebody who's a guest. But look at the campaigning so far in Johannesburg for the mayorship. It's a very different kind of campaign. It seems like there's one candidate, and then there's somebody else. We don't know who it is yet, and we may not ever know who it is for weeks on end. Why has it become this kind of campaign in which there is one candidate, the DA mayoral candidate, who is active and engaged and out there all kinds of ways, and with really opposing nobody else so far? What kind of dynamic is this?
I think, when we look at the city of Joburg and the campaign for the city of Joburg, it is going to be a hotbed of contestation. And we've slowly started to see more political parties announcing their mayoral candidates. But the DA is employing a very specific tactic. It is a turnout campaign and election for the DA. And that was made very clear when they deployed Helen Ziller. I talk about this in the book. The DA has been unable to crack the city of Joburg, and they've been unable to crack Gauteng at large. And so Helen Ziller, as a candidate for the DA, for the city of Joburg, is really a Hail Mary for the DA because they've tried everything else. They fielded a variety of candidates. They've had two sitting mayors in the city of Joburg. And despite, really the degradation of ANC rule, people have still decided to stick with the ANC and keep the ANC in a majority despite them not having 50+1, and they haven't voted for the DA. And so I think, even Helen's candidature and her candidacy rather is something that shows that the DA is quite desperate to win this election. And I think that they are going to do anything, all media stunts, all interviews. They are going to really employ and deploy all resources to get people out to vote in the city of Joburg. And I think that Helen Ziller is going to try her best possible to make sure that she comes out on top. But when we look at the numbers, I think that that is realistically very unlikely that she will get 50+1.
So if she gets, let's say for the sake of argument, if the Democratic Alliance candidate gets 40-45%, that's obviously not a majority. You need to bring in other smaller parties, unless it's a grand alliance with the ANC. You need to bring in other parties. Then you're back into your dilemma, which you're setting out: populism versus coalition politics. How does that affect the way in which government is effective or ineffective? If smaller parties must necessarily be brought in and given senior posts out of proportion to their numbers of voters, what happens next?
You will have to form a coalition in the city of Joburg. It is very unlikely that any candidate will get 50+1. And I think the theme we are going to see in the upcoming local government election, and just for elections at large, is that it is going to be about how power is negotiated. In the upcoming local government election, it's not going to be about who will win one specific metro. It is going to be parties sitting together at a national level to say, we will give you our votes in Joburg, you vote for us in Tshwane, we will vote for you in eThekwini, you then vote for us in Ekurhuleni. That is how power is going to be negotiated in the upcoming local government election. It is not going to be about one specific metro. And the difficulty, that the Democratic Alliance is facing is that they have no allies nationally. And that is the real challenge that they're going to face, and why they are specifically looking at this turnout campaign and turnout election is because they're forming a coalition is going to be extremely difficult. And I think that is what we are going to see in the upcoming local government election, is that it is not going to be about one specific campaign, one specific candidate on the ground. It's going to be about how power is negotiated at a national level and how these metros and positions are going to be split up amongst the various parties.
You say that, but help me out here. If we're looking at policy, the DA and then parties like Rise Mzansi and perhaps Action South Africa and one or two others, they seem to have at their heart pretty much the same set of governing values. That isn't a viable coalition, that isn't a viable agglomeration of talent, votes, and power?
No, because if it was, we would have seen that coalition play out already. The Rise Mzansi candidate, Lekona Mnguni, has openly stated he will not work with Helen Zille. Herman Mashaba has openly stated that he won't work with Helen Zille either. You know, these parties are very similar on paper in terms of policy positions, but policy positions on paper and governing together in a coalition are two fundamentally different things. We saw Action SA and we saw the DA try to do their version of the GNU in terms of the Moonshot Pact in 2024, and that completely failed. And so the DA, other than perhaps the IFP, and perhaps the Freedom Front Plus, you know, those two are likely not to go into coalition with the DA. But other than those two parties, they don't have allies. And henceforth, they will be unable to form a coalition. And, you know, I think specifically when we're looking in the city of Joburg, the DA's first president, Helen Zille, has openly stated this, that she wants to get 50 plus one. She doesn't want to have to come in the coalition, because coming in a coalition for the DA and for them to govern in a coalition in which they rule, unless they go into coalition with the ANC, which is just politically not viable, you know, they will not govern in Joburg.
We're going to take another quick break. This is The Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector. My guest today, Tara Roos. New book is out. First book, I think. Where to from here? Populism and Coalition Politics in South Africa. And we'll be right back after these messages.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive, and I'm your host, Brooke Spector. And my guest today, Tara Roos, who has just written Where To From Here, Populism and Coalition Politics in South Africa. I know Tara has to leave quickly for another meeting. She's a busy person. She has to earn a living like the rest of us. But I want to ask one last question of her. Given all the analysis that you have offered in your book and in our conversation, what does this mean for the next national election several years into the future? Are we going to see more identitarian politics? Are we going to see more unstable coalitions, or even a stable one? Or are we going to see the rise of a new political core, that realigning election I was referring to right at the beginning of our conversation?
I absolutely think that coalitions are here to stay. We are likely to see a coalition GNU arrangement in 2029. And after the 2026 election, you know, parties will really be focused about their alignment ahead of 2029. For parties now, it is about how much power they are able to negotiate through their votes. And so when we look to the new GNU that is coming, I think that two things are very important. One, there does need to be greater legislation change in South Africa. You know, we only have 14 days after an election to establish a government. That is not a lot of time. And I think it is very important that we look to electoral and constitutional reform around coalition legislation. Because for many countries around the world, they too are in coalition governments, but the coalitions have more time to organize themselves. I think that is very important. And then secondly, I do think that we need more political maturity inside coalitions. You know, when we look at other countries and international examples, there are set frameworks for a coalition. And the GNU currently does have a statement of intent, but it is not fully functioning. The clearinghouse mechanism inside the GNU is not how the GNU is actively working to negotiate their disputes. Instead, we see the disputes play out in the public. And so I really think we do need to look to our politicians for them to have more political maturity in coalitions. And I think once we are able to solve those two issues, we will see much more coalition stability for South Africa in the future. And we need coalition stability because of how fundamental coalitions are going to become to our democracy.
I think that's a really crucial point. I think what you're underlying all that, you're arguing for the Germans and the Dutch and the Swedes and other people to send delegations here to say, this is how we do our coalition governments, and this is how we negotiate between the parties and factions to get a government that is sufficiently stable to govern a nation. I note, for example, though, that in the United States, the coalition takes place within a party, often between very strongly disagreeing factions, but somehow they manage to tie themselves together sufficiently to actually govern most of the time. Maybe this time around has been a little awkward. But Tara, I want to thank you for joining us. I do appreciate your commentary. I recommend reading the book, Where To From Here, by Tara Roos, Populism and Coalition Politics in South Africa. And I know I have to let you go to attend another meeting. This is The Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector. Orkai FM will be back again next week with another conversation on another topic of interest or concern or enjoyment. You take care over this weekend, and we'll speak with you again next Friday.